Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Mirzron, and we're coming to you live with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Tonight, we have a very special guest, Dean Thomas. De Niro is the nickname there, and he's got a pretty impressive MMA. He's a UFC veteran and just signed with Apex Sports Agency, so we'll be talking to him in a few minutes. We got Tony Pennacal segment at the end of the show that he and I did the other night on just the boxing news of the week, primarily the big card in Brooklyn last weekend and the results from that and his opinions of the we're also talking to Tom as soon as he connects here to the studio. Sure, we'll have Psychic Tom's perspective on our guest tonight. But Dean Thomas is he's 25-8-1. I've been doing some mint recent years, and also his last fight was in May of 2012. Was a test against Cody Bollinger for Pure MMA 2. But he was on a three-fight. Wins. Three guys in a row. Dustin Pekin, Gabe Limley, and Dustin Pig. And we'll see what he has in store for the future here. What his plans are. We'll definitely be talking to him about that. But it's just an incredible who's who of fighters on the list of who he's faced here. He's got Josh Neer, Kenny Florian, Jeremy Stevens, Clay Guida, Rich Clemente, Tyrone Glover. He had his first loss to Kale, or his second loss to Kale. Actually, it was first. And he also fought BJ Penn. Just an incredible amount of top names there. Tough guy. He's got 14 submission wins, 7 by knockout, and 4 decisions. And Tom is live.
It sounds like Dean Thomas has fought a who's who. And the question that I would ask him, and hopefully I'll get the chance, who has he ducked? You tell me who he's ducked. And, right. And the longevity of his career is just, I'm amazed with this guy. I'm just so thrilled that he's going to be on.
Yeah, should be good good chat about what he's got going on. Sadly, he's still fighting. We'll see where he lands and where he ends up, but there's plenty of opportunities out there right now. And I know these agents, sports agency there, Apex, you know, they've given us a lot of good guests in the past, and they definitely work hard for their guys, so I'm sure he'll find a spot to work soon. But back again.
All right.
I don't know what happened there. But I was saying Emmanuel Stewart, sad news today, he died. He had some surgery for a stomach disorder, diverticulitis, in September. He's been hospitalized since then. And he was still very active in the boxing game, actually, as a trainer. So, coach is definitely, and also as an analyst, too. So, he's definitely going to be missed. So, young for somebody like that, who's always around physically fit people, you know. 68 years old.
You know, I have to look back on his career, and well, the first thing, of course, you know, our thoughts and prayers have to be with the family. But I have to look at the achievements. I mean, going back to Hilmer Tinti, who was around at that same time, you know, late 70s, early 80s, and I believe Hilmer Tinti was his first champion. And with Thomas Hearns, the things that he did, we can look at the Sugar Ray Leonard fight, when the hype for that was, this is going to be, you know, the hitman's coming in just to knock him out, just like he did Pepino Cuevas, and if it gets into a boxing match, Hearns won't have a chance. And, you know, I'm sure, Rich, you've probably seen that, seen the films of it, and a lot of our listeners have, and what a different fight it turned into in the second half of the fight. It's almost like we had two different fights. And I have to think that they had that strategy not to abandon Tommy Hearns' boxing skills, because it would be so easy if you put yourself in Tommy's shoes that he'd knocked out so many people. Why would Leonard be any different? But he had to go to plan B, and I'm convinced that that strategy was not formulated in a vacuum, that Emanuel Steward was right there with that whole thing. And also, he, after that fight, Tommy changed his nickname then from the Hitman to the Motor City Cobra. And he sort of changed his style for a few years until the Roberto Duran fight. And in that fight, again, I believe Emanuel Steward was so instrumental in changing the style back to the Hitman, where Tommy figured, I don't really need to box. I think I have the physicality to knock Duran out, which no one had done. No one did that ever. And Hearns did it, and I have to give Emanuel Steward so much credit for that. And it just goes on. If you look at the champions that he's worked with, it's almost like a who's who again. And he'd worked with guys that had lost to some of his fighters before. So I think he epitomizes that phrase, if you can't beat them, join them. And he'll be horribly missed. I mean, I just appreciated his insight so much that what else can we say?
And, you know, it was kind of a story sucks when it's a sudden illness. You know, there was some reports, you know, that where it's a bad thing, but you know, you think he'd go through with it, right? Mm-hmm. It's something really serious, and it's unfortunate, obviously. We got some big boxing news. Well, not really much news. We did cover a little bit of the upcoming fights for this weekend in the segment with Tony that I pre-recorded last night. Got the advanced boxing report. But we definitely got a few more stories to talk about, too. Dean Thomas coming on at the 8:30 point. But we talked about in the previous shows, Strikeforce, whether they're going to survive or not. And there was a story out last week by Dave Meltzer about this. And he talked to the promoter and three of the four main fighters who built the Strikeforce brand, and they were at a charity golf tournament. They all had more questions than answers regarding the future of the company. And makes me wonder if we need to try to get Frank Shamrock on the phone, because I know he would be outspoken about this. He's criticized Dana White up and down in the past, but we got Gilbert Melendez injured. And middleweight champion Luke Rockhold and Frank Mir, who was actually supposed to be coming over from the UFC for one night. All in the mix there. And I guess Dave talked to them. Trying to read the the whole article, but this article was actually promoted by a lot of different sites this week. Like I said in previous conversations about this, there's some details in the contract. Dave writes, all that is known is that the contract between Zuffa, the parent company of the UFC, and Strikeforce, expires early next year. Both sides are still talking. At one point in late 2011, it looked like the two sides were going their separate ways, and a deal ended up being reached. So even early speculation, things aren't looking good. It's not that much different from a year ago.
Well, I would have to think we have to look back on what's happened in the past with these kind of situations. And it seems like everything seems to wind up under that one big giant umbrella. Whether this will be different or not, I don't know. But a lot of times the best predictor of the future is the past, and we'll see what happens.
Well, the big deal is Showtime. And when I asked Scott Coker about this during the one conference call I did recently, he said, Showtime and us are very strong partners. I mean, you're going to see Strikeforce on Showtime for a very long time, he said. Guess what happened? Showtime has shown no interest in renewing their deal, so they're going to have to find a new broadcast partner. And it's kind of unfortunate because they do still have a lot of stars left over. They could build it up, but they don't have an ultimate fighter for Strikeforce. They don't have really a pipeline into Strikeforce. And the people in Strikeforce right now, they're so foaming at the mouth to be in the UFC, it's like they don't even want to stick around, most of them, I don't think. They feel like kind of cursed. Limbo, which really sucks for them. But, it's one of those things where whatever Scott Coker can do to save it, he's going to have to do, because they're leaving it up to him, and they're trying not to make it public, I think, but they're really, in the back of their minds, they really can't wait till it dies so they can
their eyes. Exactly, and if I would put myself in Scott Coker's shoes, it's like, wow, what's the next move? Where do I go from here?
Right. He's going to be the hero of the day if he can save this thing. Well, they're trying to just kind of surreptitiously kill it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But, that's definitely one of those interesting stories I'm going to have to chip in on this week if I get some time to write. But we also have news about the UFC 155. I don't think we talked about this much last week, but just enough, I think, that Chael Sonnen and Forrest Griffin are not fighting now. It's going to be the Ultimate Fighter coaches now, Chael Sonnen and John Jones. So, not going to fight. But it's going to be Phil Davis and Forrest Griffin, which is, in this article, they say it's a great matchmaking effort by Joe Silva, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I think styles make fights, and Forrest is definitely a very different style than Phil. And Phil is definitely improving. He still is not as dynamic as he should be with that body type, but I think he's a little bit more of a distance fighter. And Forrest Griffin is really a hunt you down and club you type of guy, So I just don't see him doing that well against a Phil Davis. I'd like to put him up against somebody with similar reach or something, if you're going to keep putting him out there. And Forrest is one of those guys, from what I hear, he doesn't even want to keep fighting. He just does it for the money. He could do a million other things, so who knows how serious he's going to take this.
Well, I have to say, this fight may be his swan song if things don't go his way, and if things go against him in a very bad one-sided way, but we'll see. I mean, he's such an icon. I would hate to see him retire, but everything ends sometime. So
I'm sure he'll see at least a few more fights after this. But who's next? I don't know. Phil Davis seems like a step up for him.
Yeah.
But you never know. The guy like that, anything can happen. But that's one of the other stories. Is there another story here about UFC 149, welterweight Matt Riddle and bantamweight Francisco Rivera were suspended after failing their drug tests during the week of UFC 149. And Riddle screening was flagged for marijuana, while Rivera was nabbed for using a banned stimulant. And Rivera addressed the situation through Twitter, saying his result came through a pre-workout drink called 1MR that contained an ingredient that was unbeknownst to him, banned in Canada. Both fighters were victorious in their bouts, which were contested on July 21st in Calgary. Riddle is 26. He defeated Chris Clements with a third-round arm triangle choke. And Rivera scored a first-round knockout win over Roland Delorme. And the Calgary Combative Sports Commission has not indicated whether those victories would be changed to no contests. According to MMA Junkie, both men have received 90-day suspensions. And Media Man is currently listed as suspended on MMA.com or MixedMartialArts.com. So, what's going on with that one? But, Tony and I, in our segment, discussed an all-women's boxing card this weekend, and I told him that I would update people on what that is, where it is, because I saw an article about it. Well, this is a completely different all-female card than I was thinking of, than what we were talking about. But I did say that I had the article, so I'm going to talk about it. There's a fight card down in Tijuana they're putting together. And October, if you haven't noticed the pink all over the NFL yet, it's National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So this card down there in Tijuana is being put together with all females to celebrate womanhood, I guess, on October 25th. Oh, it's tonight. It's not Friday. So it's if you're in Tijuana tonight at the Las Pulgas nightclub in downtown Tijuana, you can see some pretty interesting female fighting. Mexico's own Jocelyn Arroyo, 10-0, will face Yadira Trejo, 3-0, also of Mexico, in a 10-rounder for the NABF flyweight title. That's interesting. That's a good fight there. Also, light flyweight Julian Blackshear, 5-3, with 2 knockouts from San Diego, will fight Lily Barajas, who's 3-0 with 3 knockouts. And Blackshear is coming back after a 3-year absence from the sport. And she won the IFBA flyweight title a few years ago in 2009, she made a comeback after a 9-year layoff with Kalina Fernandez as her trainer and manager. So it's a pretty interesting card down there in Tijuana. They happen to be sitting out to the border tonight. I haven't heard anything on the Holyfield retirement front. I don't know if he actually made his announcement last Friday like we said he might, that I read. But I'll have to check that out later on.
Yeah, because I had heard that he was scheduled to do it, and then he was having some last-minute thoughts about not doing it, so I'm just not sure where that ended up. And also,
we don't have any. Go ahead.
The news about Jeff Blatnick.
Jeff Blatnick, 55 years old, heart surgery.
Yeah, that. You know, Jeff. I believe his first event was UFC 4 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in December of 1994. And Jeff, it's so interesting because Jeff, of course, coming from a wrestling background and winning the gold medal in 1984, he was never really openly biased toward his style. I think that Jeff recognized early on that wrestling's a great foundation, but you really need to diversify it. And I remember his in that first event, that was the main event, and you remember back then they were doing the tournament format, where you couldn't, it wasn't a fight card. You had to actually win, you know, it was with three different guys. You'd start off with eight, and you had the quarterfinals and the semi. And in the finals, we had a fascinating grappling match with Hoist Gracie and Dan Severn representing wrestling. And I remember that was the talk to me fight where, you know, Jeff really evolved, because at the time he didn't know what a triangle choke was, but joined the crowd. How many of us did? And if you remember that fight, Severn was having his way, and even the announcers were saying, well, what is Gracie going to do? Because Severn was just controlling the action. Severn outweighed him by about 80 pounds, and Hoist was trying to just hold him at bay in the guard. And all of a sudden, he puts this this thing called a triangle choke, and no one knew what that was then. And I remember Jeff was saying, that's nothing, he has nothing, he has nothing. And all of a sudden, Dan Severn's tapping, and it just seemed almost magical. And then Jim Brown's yelling, talk to me, talk to me. Like, somehow Jim Brown was implying that he knew what Hoist was doing. Now, whether he did or not, I question that. If we ever have Jim Brown on as a guest, I'll have to ask him that. But my point is that Jeff started working some jiu-jitsu then, and there was some talk about him maybe giving it a try in the cage, not just as an announcer, but actually getting back in there. And he knew that he had to work on his stand-up game, and at the time, shortly thereafter that, they brought in Don Wilson, or Don the Dragon, or as Tank Abbott called him, the Dragonfly. He says, where's that dragon? He says, where's that dragonfly at? He says, over in Tokyo making some Godzilla voiceover that we'll see at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know. And Bruce Beck, oh, my God, you know. But I know that Jeff was just so open-minded, and I seen him just, you know, we were all growing back in those days. Because if you remember the early days of the sport, things were just evolving so fast, and each event was so important, and we had to keep learning more and more. And Jeff just added so much. Can't believe he's gone. I mean, and they say, the bad things happen in threes. Let's hope we don't have the third shoe drop tomorrow.
Yeah, and, very sudden. It's the same way the Frank Fertitta Jr. died on the operating table. Complications from heart surgery.
Now, so when did this happen?
2008.
Oh, okay,
So it's kind of weird, you know, if you get Jeff Blatnick is from the old regime, UFC, used to be the commissioner, and he died the same way the father of the sons who owned the new UFC died.
Yeah.
So it was definitely back in the heyday, the early days, I should say. Times before
and
I was watching.
Yeah, okay. Well, I remember a lot of the comments from those days, because back then I would just get my recorder going and just, I'd even get the, you know, all the off-the-wall interviews and, you know, the back in those days, if they had 2,000 people in a live event, that was a big crowd back then, because they were always going from venue to venue and they'd get some county fair somewhere, And I remember with some of the interviews, and I thought Jeff was a great interviewer, but he was one that stands out. He was interviewing Maury Smith, who was a kickboxer who was about to take on Mark the Hammer Coleman. And this was 97, I believe, summer of 97. And Coleman, back then, when Coleman came around, he epitomized ground and pound, because before Mark Coleman came around, the talk used to be, If they'd have these little things come on about four different facts about the fighter, And if they'd say he'll strike on the ground, it used to be that meant your ground attack was a little shaky, that you didn't know submissions that well. Well, Mark Coleman single-handedly changed that whole thing. Mark Coleman was a freight train back in those days. And I remember Blatnick was talking to Maurice Smith and trying to ask about his strategy, and Maurice says, well, I'm not telling you, you're going to tell Coleman. You know, you're his buddy from wrestling. But Blatnick was, you know, Jeff was very objective. He said, oh, no, I'm just here to announce. And during that fight, again, Jeff called what he's seen. He could not have done a better job. I just never seen any hint of bias come in there at all about any style, about an individual. And I think Jeff was just the consummate pro, because there was no real notebook to follow back then. You know,
right.
So.
Here's a little bit of news. UFC light heavyweights Rashad Evans and Minotauro Nogueira will fight in February. Rashad Evans and Nogueira reportedly being targeted for the UFC's Super Bowl weekend card on February 2nd. The Brazilian outlet Globo first reported the news Wednesday morning. Verbal agreements are reportedly in place for the bout, and the UFC has announced neither the contest nor the event, which would serve as the most recent iteration of the promotion's traditional show held on the eve of the NFL's Super Bowl. Evans is 33 years old, hasn't competed since UFC 145, title fight with John Jones, and that fight snapped a four-fight winning streak for Evans, and Nogueira just rebounded from back-to-back defeats in his most recent outing as he stopped UFC Hall of Famer Tito Ortiz this past December at UFC 140, and the victory came on the heels of a unique circumstance. He suffered consecutive defeats for the first time in his 11-year pro career when he fell to Ryan Bader and Phil Davis, in September of 2010 and March of 2011. So this should be a pretty interesting fight. We'll see what happens there.
I'm kind of thinking who has the most to lose in this one.
Well, I don't think they could throw either guy out. You know, they've got that name recognition. They'll be around forever. It's not like they're on the tier where if they lose a few fights in a row, they're getting thrown out.
Yeah, exactly. But, because I think with Little Nog, he has the boxing skills and the jiu-jitsu skills that you can't really count him out. And Rashad, on the other hand, is come up short. It had to be a terrible disappointment with John Jones, but you know he's motivated to get another shot at this. I mean, I don't know Rashad, but I'd have to think that that's so important to get back in and get one more chance at it. So maybe a very entertaining fight.
And the next UFC fight is not until November 10th. We got a long way away. That's Rich Franklin versus Conley. Thiago Silva versus Stanislav Nedkov, the co-main event there. I don't think I've ever seen Nedkov fight. But Silva's obviously a pretty big name. This is the longest we've been without a UFC fight in a little while.
You know, with that main event, I'll fall back on another cliche about how styles make fights, and I don't know if either one of these guys will ever get a shot at the title, but I do think this could be a barn burner, potentially.
Yeah.
Because Rich Franklin is seldom in a boring fight, and Kung Lee, it's not like he takes a step backwards either, so this is I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I've been kind of in and out of the fight game. He's been spending some time doing some movies in Hollywood. He's not somebody who's been putting a lot of fights together over the years. He has one, seems like, maybe every 6 months when he's active. So, know, I might have some rust there. Rich Franklin's been a little bit more active. He's faced a lot tougher competition over the years, and what you see a lot of times with these strike force guys coming over the UFC, as soon as they go up against a big name, they get wiped out. But Conley is just such a dynamic fighter.
Oh yeah, I mean, just that explosiveness, and it would be hard to train for.
Lose me, Tom. Hello. Hello. Can you hear me now? Tom, you there? Back, ready to call Dean Thomas. You there, Tom?
I'm here.
I don't know what happened there. He faded. You know, be able to connect with him any second now.
I'm here.
All right. Dean Thomas, I think he's a free agent right now as far as what leagues he's looking at. We'll have to find out straight from Dean Thomas himself. Hold on. Get to conference call. Let's see.
And I'd say Udo both times I fought him have been, were really tough for me.
How did you first get into fighting?
It was back in the mid-90s, when the UFC was just getting off the ground. You know, I was watching it, and then, I was lucky enough to, have a shoot fighting place near where I live. So I started doing shoot fighting, and then I just kind of got involved. I don't know how I got involved, just was doing shoot fighting. Then I was traveling, like driving everywhere. Like being in South Florida, we were kind of lucky and fortunate that a lot of Brazilians came here. And, and there were some schools in the South Florida area. So, like, every so often there would be, like, a seminar. Like, I didn't live close enough to be able to attend regularly, go to schools regularly. It was, like, 2 hours from me. But I would drive there for different seminars. And that's kind of how I picked up the game, just going to seminars and then taking it back home. And me and my buddy Paul Rodriguez would be in the front yard practicing. But, I don't know. It was a lot different than it is today. Like, today you can go, hey, there's an MMA school on every corner today. Back then it wasn't like that. You had to kind of do it on your own.
Yeah,
it seems like then it was a whole different world back then. Just so grassroots, and everyone was learning as they were going. And let me ask you, did you do some training in Miami with Bart Vail back then?
I did. Bart Vail was the first guy to ever give me cauliflower here. Training with him was rough. Man, like, because I went down there and I trained with him, and, like, you know, I was like 140 pounds. You know, he was like,
yeah, and Mark Mills liked what he had. Yeah, exactly. A Mutton Jeff, you know. That must have been interesting. Well, the reason I'm asking you is when I started training, I'm from Ohio, and there was a shoot fighting school up in by Cleveland. And that was my first seminar when Bart Vail came up. And, he had a couple interesting fights in those days. Old Mike Batonio, you remember that one?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, World Combat Championship.
Yeah,
Bart Vail.
I always had respect for Bart.
Oh, yeah, he was definitely a pioneer. I mean, I look at you as a pioneer. I mean, I think your first match on your record was back in 98, I believe, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
it kind of puts you in the pioneer category, you know?
Yeah, I kind of look at myself as like the second generation of fighters, you know? I think like the first generation would have to go to like Bart Vail and, you know, Enzo Gracie and Half Gracie, John Lewis, you know, those are the guys that, like, I looked up to coming up. Like, I used to look back at them. And even, I tell you what, like, even Vanderlei Silva kind of came up in that first generation of guys. I mean, these were guys that, like, back in Brazil, like, in the WVC and the old, you know, Mark Kerr and Fabio Gurgel, these guys was fighting back then. Those are the guys that, like, I looked up to. And then I came along after them. And now it's just, like, so... Hello?
Can you hear us now?
You guys there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you now. I lost y'all for like, we've seen like 5 minutes.
At least 30 seconds there. Phone faded out.
No, I'm just playing around. Man, where are you guys located at?
I'm up in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire? Oh, no kidding. So you're in New Hampshire, you better be getting ready for that storm that's coming.
Yeah, the hurricane.
Yeah, y'all getting a hurricane.
Yeah.
We're dealing with that now.
Oh, really? Already,
huh? Yeah.
Yeah, this is a weird area for hurricanes to even get to. So once they get here, usually they're nothing. So I'm not really as much as you might be. But looking back, there anything that you do to prepare for a fight? And what was the most important thing that you do to get ready for
the fight? You know, I've been dead. And, you know, when I'm coaching guys, it actually helped me, as you know, to go to fight, being a coach, because I see what young fighters are going through. And I think the most important thing when you're preparing for a fight is the mental training, because you can train physically, and, you know, you can train physically, and it won't mean nothing if you go in flat mentally. So I think that you got to be prepared physically, but I think the mental training, as far as like visualization and meditation, and just, you know, being able to make sure that you have the confidence to go out there and fight properly is the most important aspect of being a fighter. And that's just the mental part of it. Because if you don't do that and you don't have it.
Yeah, I can understand that. You know, I had that when I wrestled once. I never forgot to win here after that. When I wrestled.
Yeah, you see it all the time. You see.
Yeah, when I wrestled, I won. My big claim to fame was my second year I won the JD State Championships. And I'll never forget it, because right before the fight, I was probably the most relaxed, or the wrestling match, not the fight, but the most relaxed I've ever been before a wrestling match. And it was a tournament format. I wrestled a couple other guys that day. And I just remember looking right up at the lights. It was at my own school, you know, so I was comfortable. I relaxed for about 30 minutes before the fight, and I went in there, and it was the quickest win ever as a wrestler. I just grabbed him by the leg, got him in a cradle, and it was over.
He's a rat, but it's because he was... You know, even good fighters talk themselves out of a fight just being nervous, or just because they didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, and you know, any time that you're nervous, I know it's in the Rocky movie that, you know, fear is your friend, but I don't agree with that.
No, I don't agree with that either. I don't know about that. I think that, you know, you got to be able to block that out. I don't agree with using like fear as fuel. I think that doesn't really do much for you. I think you got to block it out and focus. I think focus is your friend, not fear. But then you got to be able to focus so that you ignore the fear and you're not even thinking about it, and just go out there and do what you do, because otherwise, you know, if you're scared, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're scared of the outcome, you will write your own outcome normally for the worst.
Well, what I always liked about your mindset is you always seemed like you were very confident, but you didn't really come across as being cocky about things. You know, you just seemed like, hey, I'm in control. I know what I'm going to do, and I always admired that about you. You know, you come in and you just had that bearing. You know, like, tonight's my night, and I know what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the way I try to approach it, because, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do my thing, and I'm either going to win or I'm going to lose. I'm going to try to work the game plan that I've been training for the last 2 months. And if it works, then I hope to win. If it doesn't work, then, you know, it's either the game plan was wrong or I didn't execute it. But I know that I'm going to do my best to execute it to the best of my ability. And if it doesn't work, then the guy's just going to have, he was better than me. And, you know, there's not really much you can do about that.
Sure, and I never recall you beating yourself mentally either, you know, and that's so important. You know, the old cliche, it's a long walk from the dressing room down to that cage, even if it's only 50 feet. It's a long walk, and that mental is so big.
Yeah, it is, you know. Yeah, and it is not even really a walk. It's that when you're in that holding area, like right before the walk, I still see a lot of guys shut down and just, they just crumble at that point. Like, as soon as it's their time to go, the, you know, whoever's bringing it out is like, all right, you're up, you're on deck. And then at that point, I see a lot of fighters crumble because they're like, uh-oh, I don't know what to expect. And then that's it for them to go out there and, you know, they lay an egg.
Sure.
Now, Dean, I read a little bit earlier about you doing some management out there. Well, since you've been around since the 90s, you've seen the sport develop. What do you think about the management side of things and the money that fighters are getting and just the growth? Does it need more?
Well, you know, when it comes down to it, I think that... you know, a lot of times I side with managers because fighters are always, you know, they expect a lot from managers, but what they got to understand is that the manager's not really making money off of them. You know, so like they're expecting them to do a job for them for essentially nothing, because at the end, you know, when they get paid, you know, they giving up, you know, 10-20%, you know, they're, you know, managers are making like in the beginning, you know, $50, $100, and you know, you don't want them to do all this work for you. So I think in the beginning, you know, you're doing this for the love of it. No, but I think what we need right now, as far as like between managers, promoters, is that we have money to come. So, man, we got a lot, because it's such an easy sport to get involved in. There's a lot of shady people out there who's just trying to make a quick buck, you know, and they're dishonest. They do things and like, it's going to come from potential sponsors. And when you got shady people that, you know, that give bad experiences to potential sponsors, that ruins it for everybody. It ruins it for the good people. So I think that we need.
All right, so we are back. We had a little technical error there. Skype disconnected us. We'll get Tom back any second now. Also going to reconnect with Dean as soon as we can. Let's get Dean back.
Hello.
Hello, Dean. Sorry.
Hey, what's up, man? I know, man. I was like getting to keep up, too.
What happened there? But, you were talking about sponsors banding together, I think, when we disconnected.
Yeah, well, what I basically was saying was this, you know, I firmly believe in like some type of union that I think the fighters and, you know, everybody needs to be a part of some type of union. It's not like a very structured type union, but at least on the same page, and we need to get rid of all the bums that are getting involved in this game, because it's just ruining the game and making it harder for anybody to make money. They're trying to get the money too fast, and they're being dishonest about a lot of things. But I feel like this, you know, with the managers, the promoters, the fighters, we're all on the same page, all together, that we can have a much better sport.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of a weird source to get the information from, but I was listening to an interview with Jason Mayhem Miller over the weekend, where he was explaining how when he was he promised to retire after losing, if he lost to C.B. Dalloway, and he had a bad knee injury, and you know the UFC is supposed to have health insurance for anything that happens in a fight, you know, in particular. And he was talking about how the doctor kind of gave him the runaround about, you know, not scheduling any kind of MRI for him and stuff like that. And he said that, you know, once you're all used up, you know, even the USC won't touch it, won't catch a treatment. And I thought that was kind of interesting because they're out there touting how great it is and everything. And,
well, yeah, I mean, they're kind of, you know, the UFC is like that. I mean, it's, you know, when you're with them and you're, you know, on the same page with them and doing what they want, you know, they take care of you, but the moment they give you that pink slip, they don't know you at all, and they forget about you. They won't return your call. They will have you from the website and anything that ever had to do with them.
That's ridiculous. But,
yeah, it can be kind of ruthless.
Yeah. Now, is it is it your goal at all to get back to that level, or are you just pretty much, you know, looking to see what comes?
Well, initially, you know, if you asked me this question 6 months ago, I would have told you that my definite goal was to get back with UFC. You know, I've always kind of had a goal to get the belt, and I failed at 55 a couple of times, and, you know, I went back on the show, The Ultimate Fighter Season 4, and had an opportunity at 170, and I didn't, you know, be able to take, I wasn't able to take full advantage of it. Now I'm fighting at 145. I feel like that I could do it at 45, but it's just right now, it's, you know, it's so difficult to get in the UFC at 145 that, you know, by the time I'm, you know, I just feel like by the time I'm even able to get there, I may not have the same steam that I have right now. So right now it's all about, you know, I've accomplished all the goals I wanted in my fight career. So now I'm just trying to have some fun, still do what I've been doing the last decade, you know, maybe inspire some young fighters and, you know, and put on some good shows. I think that's kind of what my goal is now.
Do you have a favorite punch,
right,
move, or submission, or anything like that that you like to use more than anything else?
You know what? I don't know. I've been, you know, recently, you know, because, you know, I've gotten a little older, I've gotten a lot smarter in my training. And, you know, young fighters are, you know, they're tough, hard to deal with because of their strength and athleticism. But as an older fighter, you know, I've had to learn to use better setups and more tricks. So I've been playing with a lot of different stuff. And right now, I got an armbar that's crazy. So I'm hoping to be able to use that in a fight. You know, it's a special armbar I've been doing. So I'm hoping to be able to get that away, get away with that in a fight.
I always think you can watch guys who really use that and how they can get one out of nowhere. And, you know, it's crazy when you get in, like, a grappling competition. Just somebody gets caught in that. I was out in Vegas last year.
Try again. Yeah.
Useful move. That's available. Ronda
Rousey. I think I lost y'all for about a second.
So, is there anybody out there that you really want to fight, you'd love to fight or have another opportunity at if you fought them already or haven't fought them yet?
Well, you know, again, that's one of them questions that if you asked me a couple years ago, I would probably ramble off a whole bunch of names. You know, nowadays, you know, everybody's good. Like, it doesn't, like, right now, there's a difference between, like, when I came up and today. When I came up, you know, everybody was still kind of, you know, one-dimensional. Even up until about 5 years ago, there maybe one still sort of one-dimensional. Nowadays, everybody's good everywhere. So, essentially, it's almost like you're fighting the same guy. Some guys are a little bit better in certain areas than others. But I think that now, you know, even at, like, the regional level, so a lot of good talent, a lot of strong up-and-coming fighters that, for me, I think any of them could bring out the best in me. So, you know, I don't have anybody that I specifically want to fight. I think that I could fight. I can compete with anybody in the world. I know that for a fact. But just it's a matter of, you know, putting on a good show. And I think that there's so many good guys out there that, you know, that I know could bring out the best in me and allow me to put up the performance that I need, that I'm just ready to step in there with anybody and do it.
You know, Jen, I think you kind of answered the question I was about to ask you about the secret to your longevity because, I mean, let's face it, according to MMA standards, you've been around like a couple lifetimes. And like you said, as you get older, you have to just get a little smarter about things. And do you think that it's just your increased, you know, fight smarts and experience that accounts for a lot of your longevity and training a little bit smarter now, do you think?
Oh, without a doubt. That's the 100% thing that that has kept me around this long. And that's the one thing that I try to promote, you know, when I'm teaching and when I'm coaching fighters. You know, first and foremost, the first thing we do is we practice defense. You know, you got to be defensive. You can't get into a bunch of wars all the time. You got to be able to defend yourself. If you don't, you're going to have a short career. Some guys, you know, they get hit a lot. They take a lot of damage in fights. And you can't have that, especially coming up. Even if you lose a fight, you really don't want to take a lot of damage, or you ain't going to be around in 5 years. So I think that the key is you got to be able to stay out of a lot of wars. You could have an exciting fight without it being a war. You know, you just got to block. And you got to stay on angles and you know, work angles and you know, do a lot of tricky stuff. So You know, I think that's the key to being around in this game for a while and staying around and staying relevant. Is to, one, you got to win. Two, you can't get hurt. Can't be hurt too much. And three, man, you just gotta be exciting though. Gotta be exciting.
Now, have you changed your method of doing cardio since you were younger? Do you train your cardio a little bit different, or do you think comes with relaxation?
When you're younger, you do things because you think you're supposed to. You do it because it's cool and it makes you feel good. So you're out there, you're running and you're lifting weights and you're doing a bunch of stuff to look cool and feel better. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's working, but it sure is making you feel better. Nowadays, you know, I'm making sure that I'm a lot more specific about what I'm doing, what is working, and I'm standing on track of where I want to be. So, like, I'm not wasting my time banging my head against the wall. You know, a lot of guys putting all these hours in just banging their head against the wall. It's not necessarily making them better. But, you know, they're putting their work in and they can, you know, tell their friends about it, but it doesn't mean it's making them better.
That was very well worded. I'm going to remember that. Yeah, that's great.
Now, what would you say you love most about the sport of MMA?
You know, I love the pure essence of MMA is the struggle and the battle between two guys. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, as a male, you know, we feel like we have to fight for what we have. And when you present it in the cage or even in training, you know, you're not given any external hope. You know, you don't have a bat, you don't have a gun. You know, you can't rely on your status to win. It's about what you are as a human being, as a male, and the skill set you have. So, you know, when it's me and that guy, you know, if he's got more money than me, he drives a better car, lives in a better house. None of that'll matter. All that matters is who's going to win at that moment right there, and that's the one thing I like about this sport.
Well, that's probably one of our best answers yet to that question.
Yeah, I'd have to say that, Rich. Of all the people we've interviewed, Din is tickling my brain as much as anyone else has, maybe more. Yeah.
Now, is there anybody that helped you out along the way, big-time role models, either inside or outside the sport?
Oh, yeah. I've had, I'd say the three guys that have helped me the most, you know, in this sport were Mike Bell. He was my kickboxing coach from Orlando. My first kickboxing coach from Orlando, his name is Mike Bell. I'd say Howard Davis Jr., Ricardo Laborio, and then Dan Lambert were the top four guys that allowed me to be where I am today. If it wasn't for those guys, and I think that even just if one of them wasn't part of the equation, I wouldn't be where I am today, and I wouldn't. Yeah, I owe those guys all the credit. Did you catch them? I think I cut out. Yeah. Did you catch the four guys? That,
right, right. I heard him then.
That I named off.
I think you did.
Yeah, it was Mike Bell, Howard Davis Jr., Ricardo Laborio, and Dan Lambert.
You know, yeah, Din, I'm very curious about Howard Davis Jr. You know, here we're talking about a Hall of Fame boxer, and could you elaborate a little bit on how he maybe adapted his tactics to work a little better in the cage than the ring? Or because, you know, it's not exactly the same thing, as you know, because you have to be worried about the takedowns and the kicks, and yet boxing's so important. So,
yeah. Well, more so than anything else, like even when Howard first came to American Boxing, he was always an artist. And I think that, and I don't even mean that in the sense of fighting arts. I think that in his life, I mean, he plays instruments and things like that. So he's very artistically gifted. So when he saw MMA, he didn't look at it like, oh, I got to make you a boxer. So he looked at it, you know, as another way where he could, you know, put his artistic creativity to it. So he was able to say, all right, this is the type of footwork you should probably have. This may be the way you should stand to keep guys from grabbing your legs. And he just, I think he did a really good job with that. And I was able to adapt to it. For some reason, you know, I was able to pick it up just because I have just naturally just decent footwork. So I was able to adapt to it even more so than a lot of the other guys on the team. So, you know, his influence wasn't necessarily for the boxing, but just for the way he artistically created a system to be able to work for MMA.
And you know, I've seen boxing coaches that can't do that. Some of them will come in, like we had a few in our gym that would come in, and they'd had great success in you know, working with pure boxers. But they couldn't seem to change the game slightly so it'll be more effective in the cage. They just didn't seem to understand about the, you know, the kicks, the takedowns, and it was just a little different. You need a few modifications. And the fact that Howard did that, I'm in awe of the guy. I mean, it's just amazing. And I look at the results, and I look at what he's turned out. So,
yeah, hard. Like a lot of boxers, especially old-school boxers, they just don't get it. You know, like they're very good at throwing punches, but they don't understand that there's some slight changes in the stance that will change everything. And there's small, minor changes that they just don't see. And if you can't see them, it's going to be very difficult to change it.
Yeah,
and a lot of guys have to figure out how to punch from, you know, down on the knees or even from the bottom position. A lot of guys can throw elbows and land punches from the bottom position, and there's a whole bunch of guys who haven't figured that out yet. You know?
Dude, that's something that I've been working on a lot too, because I spent a lot of time, you know, doing jiu-jitsu, and I spent a lot of time developing a striking system from off my back, actually.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things to do, but, you know, if you're first in throwing punches and practice it enough, you can master it. I've seen guys get cut open from the top position. So that guy's on his back and throws a nice elbow to the point of the forehead or something, you know?
Yeah, it's dangerous. I'll tell you what, when I fought Kenny Florian, and the brief moment that I got on top of him, and he hit me with a couple of elbows, I was like, uh-oh, I do not want to get on top of this guy. It was almost like, I don't want to take him down.
Yeah, Kenny's a New England guy. I've run into him at a few shows. Real gracious guy, a real tough fighter, for sure.
Yeah, very tough fighter, smart guy. You know, I spent a lot of time with him, and he's a great guy.
Watch every time you fight, and that you try to pick stuff up from, or anything like that.
Oh, you know, I don't know. I have a hard time watching. And no disrespect to MMA guys, I don't really like to watch MMA to pick stuff up. Like when I'm picking stuff up and I'm trying to, you know, develop new things and new techniques, I normally go to the specific discipline. So, like, if I'm looking for, like, hands, I look at boxers. If I'm looking for wrestling techniques, I'll look at wrestling. If I'm, you know, and same thing for jiu-jitsu. So, like, I rarely look at MMA. Like, when I'm watching MMA, I'm more so just like to be entertained by the fight as opposed to, like, picking up techniques to help develop my game. But when I'm doing that, I like to specify it to the specific discipline.
So how about anybody out there you're a big fan of that you just like watching?
Yeah, see, yes, yeah, that's... There's a lot of guys I like watching. I like watching the Diaz brothers. Obviously, you know, everybody's going to say Anderson. I like watching him just because, you know, he's a magician at what he does. And always, my good friend, I've always enjoyed watching Thiago Alves, who's my good friend. And I've trained with him a lot, but I enjoy watching him fight too.
Yeah, a lot of guys give Nick Diaz a bum rap, but one thing they really about him.
Yeah, you know, I think Nick Diaz gets a, you're right, he gets a bum rap, and I hate that because I think he's probably one of the more genuine guys. And, you know, people may hate him, but I know a lot of fighters, and I know a lot of fighters that aren't good guys in real life, but they fake it in front of the camera, and people love them. I think Nick Diaz is real.
Yeah, bad that anxiety that he has really is. I mean, just watching him in a recent interview on Uncensored MMA, you could see him, like, you know, running his hands up and down his legs. I mean, just staying one sentence in front of a camera is really tough for that guy.
Yeah.
I can understand why he would need some type of medication, you know. And I think he really got screwed with the suspension, but, you know, he'll be back.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
Great shape with the triathlons too, and it's unreal. But get back to you. Is there any organization out there that you're trying to look hard at to join anytime soon, or is there anybody that's
you know, I've had a couple offers. You know, I had an offer from an organization in Mexico, and then my good friend actually Charles McCarthy just hit me up actually today, and and told me about an offer in Europe. I'm directing all that stuff to my new management, though. So I was like, yo, call my management. So, you know, it just depends. You know, there's no organization that, you know, that stands out more than any other one right now. So, and there's no fighter that stands out more than any other one. So, you know, I'm open for anything right at this point.
And what would you say about the situation there right now in the whole sport of MMA, and how many other promotions have sprung up over the years? Is that exciting? Do you think it's a bad thing in the long run? I know you said there's a lot of shady promoters out there, but as far as the big promotions that are you know, really churning things up right now, what do you think about that whole landscape?
No, I think it's a good thing. I think that because we need them. You know, fighters need them. You know, a guy like myself, and you know, the UFC will cut you at any moment. And when you get cut from the UFC, it's kind of hard to go back down. And if there has to be certain tiers of organizations, I believe. I mean, you know, guys just starting out, they're fighting in a certain level, and then there should be another tier, and then the UFC. Obviously, the UFC is the biggest organization in the world. But when you get cut from the UFC, it's kind of hard to swallow your pride and go back to fighting in the nightclub, you know. So with all these other organizations coming out doing their thing, I think it's great.
Well, it's interesting too to see how MMA is made up, where, you know, guys in boxing, they come up and they're only doing 4-round fights, but MMA guys, they come right into the professionals and they're doing full 3-round fight. It's just the same.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they could do that differently. Kind of like,
yeah, I mean, that's interesting. That's an interesting point. I mean, I don't know how they would do it. Like right now in Florida, the amateur, they have kind of like certain rules like that for amateurs. Where amateurs, I mean, it's still 3-3s, but they have certain rules for amateurs and stuff that you can't do until you have a certain amount of fights. And that may actually be a good idea for the professional ranks to, you know, ease them into to working their way up to, you know, the bigger rounds.
Well, right now, I mean, Dana White is always talking about how he'd like to be like the NFL or better someday. And, you know, the NFL has all that stuff. They have players' unions and, you know, all kinds of insurance and just a ridiculous amount of organizations. Some of it may be too much, but I think the whole MMA landscape needs to look at a pension system and better health care for these guys, number one. But,
And I always said that, you know, there needs to be a union for fighters. And it seems to be the only way to do that now is you'd have to go through Dana White. But if you kind of look at it, Dana White is the union. I mean, he controls the whole game of what everything happens. It is really relevant in that way. So if there is a union, Dana White is the head of it.
Right. I kind of get pissed sometimes because he gets so much credit for just being a mouthpiece for most of his job, you know. That's pretty much what he does. And he wields so much influence. And I always love it when anybody points out, this guy was never in a fight. You know, he was just a boxer size instructor. When he boxed himself, he really wasn't in a fight. You know, there's no record out there for Dana White, the amateur professional. So, you know, to hear that guy especially rip a fighter for not fighting to his potential, you just want to be like, well, when's the last time you had a fight, buddy?
Yeah, I mean, I see that too. It's, you know, it's really hard to criticize or to accept the criticism of him, you know, when he's like, oh, you know, you didn't fight to your potential, you're a bum, da-da-da. It's like, man, you don't know what it's like to be in these shoes.
Yeah, I know. I've been so tempted to say that sometimes when I'm sitting in the audience and someone will be sitting behind me, you know, someone that's been making a lot of trips back to the beer area, you know, and oh, well, if I was in there. And I say, you know, I'd like to see you make that walk to the cage without fainting, you know. And I remember one time someone behind me was complaining about too much grappling. Well, you know, this is MMA. You know, you can stand, you can get on the ground. Well, give him an arm bar. And it's like I was so tempted to say something, but what good's it going to do? You know, until you've been through that, forget it, you know.
Well, I tell you what, the biggest thing for me is that I do not watch fights in front of people. You know, I don't go to the bar to watch the UFC. And if I'm not at a fighting event, working the corner, I'm never there just watching. I can't do it. I can't listen to the fans like that. To me, it's so disrespectful. And I know that I'm going to have to say something, but I can't do it.
I can imagine. I mean, it bothers me a lot, and I can only imagine how you would feel. And that is just a great answer. Yeah.
Now, what's your ultimate goal in the sport?
Well, my ultimate goal getting into the sport was to fight in Japan, and I did that in a year. Well, 2 years of fighting. And right now, my ultimate goal is. And then 2 years ago, I'd say my ultimate goal was to win a UFC belt. But right now, you know, at this point, I think my ultimate goal is to just put up some numbers. You know, I want to put up the type of performance in the next couple of fights that people can talk about. You know, that's what I really want to do. I want to put up those some really strong performances that people can talk about and say, you know, man, he did his thing for the game. And, you know, he made his mark in the game. And I think that, you know, I've been around this game for so long that, you know, I'm trying to be a Hall of Famer. You know, it's difficult if you don't have a UFC, if you don't have the UFC strap, but I'm trying to be MMA Hall of Famer, not a UFC Hall of Famer, MMA Hall of Famer. And I just need a couple more strong performances to do that.
Well, I think, Dan, no matter what happens from here on, that I think you have a great future as a coach, a trainer, maybe even a commentator. Have you considered doing any, you know, getting behind the mic at all?
Well, actually, I'm actually the one of the speaking of Howard David Jr., I'm one of the commentators for, he has a show in Fort Lauderdale called Fight Time, and I'm one of the commentators for that. So,
great.
That's what I've been doing on my off time is commentating that organization.
Great.
It seems like you have good pitch to your voice. It's like one of the loudest I've ever had on the phone.
Well, I apologize for that. Sometimes I get a little excited.
Oh, no, that's great. That's genuine. That's what's needed.
Okay.
You don't see it well, so yeah, definitely a broadcast career could be in your future.
Well, I'm going, you know, that's my next thing. I want to stay in this game for as long as I can. If I'm not doing it throwing punches, you know, I'm going to be doing it somewhere.
Well, hopefully you're not done in the cage yet either, you know, so.
True.
Always better to hear from somebody who's actually been in the cage.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, just putting a microphone in front of somebody's face, just actually fighting and then commentating is just big. But is anybody you want to give a shout-out to, thank, or say hello to out there?
Well, you know, I definitely got to give a shout-out to my new management company, Apex, Jason Chambers, and the whole squad for, you know, for bringing me back to life, resurrecting me. And really, I want to give a shout-out to you guys. Man. You guys have, you know, you gave me an opportunity to speak my piece and allowed me to be on your show. So, you know, whatever I can do to help you guys out, if y'all ever need me to talk to y'all again, you know, when I got a big fight coming up, I definitely want to come back on with you guys and announce it. So, you know, shout out to y'all for looking out for me.
Well, you actually missed
thank you.
Our co-host tonight. He's going to a wedding, so it'd be nice to.
His loss.
We'll have him on the next time.
Perfect.
Some more questions, but definitely interesting talking to you. You got a definitely fantastic perspective on the sport. So it's always cool talking to somebody and know. definitely wish you luck, although I don't think luck is going to be much of a, play much of a part in your future. I think your determination is going to get you through more than anything. And this management team that you're working with now, I get a lot of interviews from them. They work with a lot of big-name guys, and I know that they're going to treat you well. So.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. And I appreciate y'all allowing me to get on here and speak my piece.
Well, Den, I have to live up to my nickname of Psychic Tom, and my crystal ball says nothing but good things for you in the future.
Man, I appreciate that, man. Psychic Tom, I appreciate that.
Okay, bud.
All right, guys, I appreciate the call.
Okay, Den.
All right, take it easy.
All right, bye. Okay, that's Dean Thomas. Still a promotional free agent, I guess, but definitely somebody who has a lot of fight left in him. As we've heard, sounds like he's definitely interested in cementing his legacy and, you know, obviously going out with a bang. If you know, he gets into a good promotion, I think he'll do well.
Oh, yeah, and I'd have to say that was one of the most interesting interviews we've had. No knock on any other ones, but that was wow.
Yeah, he definitely has the voice for talk radio. Much better
mm-hmm.
than mine.
Yeah, and mine.
But yeah, we got a big half an hour segment that we got to play from Tony. So what we're probably gonna do right now, unless you have anything to add, Tom, I think I'm out of stuff except for the fight schedule, which you can find on SureDog if you're looking for it. And Tony and I talk about the boxing schedule coming up. So
well, that's good. Just get it on, and we'll be checking in next week, and we'll go from there.
We're going to work on trying to get Frank Shamrock for next week. He's got a book out, so he's got stuff to talk about. So.
Oh, how exciting that'll be. Again, talk about this old school stuff. I mean, I'm just in hog heaven on this. So this is great. Can't be better. All right, and as I say to you every week, enjoy the fights.
Yes, sir. Thanks for stopping by. And we're going to be playing a segment now from last night, the Advanced Boxing Report. Me and Tony the Tornado. Going to finish out the show here. Once I can get the clip up on my slow computer, we will start that off. Of course, we talked a lot about the big Brooklyn card at the Barclays Center this past weekend. And a lot of interesting fights on that card. I don't know if I mentioned it in the broadcast that we did, but Boyd Melson also was on that card, a guy that we put a lot of stories on the blog about. He had a draw in his fight on that card. And I don't think he was happy about it being at home, in his home area of New York. But, all right, we got it all queued up here. Here is myself and Tony. This is Ramble Around with Rich Bergeron. In the boxing segment, I guess, for our Thursday night show this week, the Advanced Boxing Report, technically, even though it will be in the regular hours of the show. So did you see the Brooklyn card the other night at all?
I saw part of it. I was having a party that night, so I could watch it for July. And I think about some of the highlights and replays. I tried to watch the whole card last night, but unfortunately, Mr. Sandman got a hold of me, and I did not get the whole thing.
Well, I actually watched most of the Malik Nagy play. And it turned out to be one of the most controversial ones on the card.
I caught a good bit of the
cut on Connor's eye, like in the first or second round. I think it was the first round. And just kept hammering and hammering. And if it wasn't for that cut, I don't think there's any way Kyle Ignatius wins that fight, because Connor really stepped it up later in the contest after he got that thing under control. And it was only because of the cut, I think, in the early part of the fight, and the fact that it was bleeding right to his eye, that he did so badly early on. So I don't know what Kyle Ignatius hit him with to cut that open, but I'm thinking it was just a good, nice, sharp jab. And that saved his ass. He basically was on cruise control that whole fight. So he might have looked like he was in control, but there was a lot of rounds where Connor freaking hit him hard. And it probably was because it was a lot of body shots that hurt Kyle Ignatius here and there, but that really didn't, you know, he didn't really show any pain. And stuck it out also in front of the hometown crowd. So now he knows what it's like to be on the other side of that.
Strategy because we know now only referees can let him go. So,
got a gift, though. I think it was close, and maybe the guy deserved a draw or something. But I don't know. You could, I guess you could argue both ways. Just what style you like better.
Some of the other fights on the card there, Took the unanimous decision to overrule Randall Bales.
Garcia. Maybe he wants to come out or
boxing matches coming up this weekend that we should know about?
Sure. They didn't leave, and if I was to come in the car to get a Brooklyn, then like last week. What was our TNT segment last week?
Women.
Exactly. We're looking for competition. A long email card, but it doesn't play well.
I have that in my my window to talk about during the show, so I will mention it. I have the article pulled up, but I just didn't bring the internet up because Skype and the recording device here. I want to just keep those open because anytime I open other shit, I even have problems. It seems.
Yeah.
definitely taken off, you know, without PR.